today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey guys, it's the damnedest thing. I woke up this morning with stones in my mouth.
What? Stones in your mouth? You really should see a doctor about that. I'm just going to start the show with this. Pretty good. So our friend Mike Snyder, who is here today, he brought something really interesting that I don't think I've ever had before. It's a rice ale. This one is by a brewer called Great Divide.
They're in Colorado somewhere. Okay. I've never had this either.
It's Samurai Rice Ale.
Part of my beer explorations. I'm trying to find nice, light, tasty beers you can drink during the summertime that's not made by a big beer producer.
Now, isn't sake, isn't that a rice-based
alcohol? Yes, it is.
Alcohol? Yep. So will this be like that?
I don't think it's going to be that strong, but, you know, what's interesting is a lot of big beer pilsners do use rice instead of other grains because it's cheaper, and sometimes they get a bad rap for that. So I was really interested to know what you guys think of this.
All right, I'm going to give it a try.
It's the next beer on
my... Patrick is already drinking it. So what do you think while I try it?
Give me another one and I'll figure it out. I like it. It is light. It doesn't have a whole lot of...
taste?
No, I wasn't going to say that. Well, no, it doesn't have a whole lot of, punch right off the top, but it does have like a little, a nice kind of a little tang to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does have a certain flavor to it that reminds me a little bit of sake. It's like,
it's not necessarily a sweetness, but it's a little bit of a tang.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I can't say I've had anything like this.
No.
Let's see what the expert's palate tells him.
I do kind of like this. It's a little bit understated.
Yeah.
Like I said, it doesn't have a bite to it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's one of the, some people that don't like pilsners don't like that bite. What's the right? The malt gives it a weird flavor that you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some people just don't like that malt flavor. That's what's so interesting about IP. We're going off the rails here, aren't we? But anyway, we'll talk more about the beer, in the extras or something.
Yeah, we can do that.
So we can recommend this, though.
It's certainly drinkable.
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's drinkable until you get to the next kind of beer you got. So, okay, right. Great. Great Divide. It's called Samurai Ale. So
I'd be curious sometime to get your list of beers that are not drinkable, Patrick.
Well, there are a few out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll save that for another time.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us are...
Intern Sam.
Mike Snyder.
And welcome, guys. Thanks for coming on over.
Thanks for having us.
So we wanted to close the loop on a certain discussion. A little while back, we did a Bruce Springsteen week.
We did.
That's right.
With both of these guys. Mm-hmm. And we went through 5 classic albums, one per day, and sort of broke it down and talked about our feelings on those records.
Thanks to everybody who tuned in. We had, I think, some folks that probably might not have heard our show before, based on the large numbers of listeners. And that was really encouraging. And I also want to say it was this group of four here, we really all were on our A game. I thought everybody said such interesting stuff, and I thought it was really good. If you haven't heard those shows,
go back and do that.
Yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely. And we did that specifically on a week that was leading up to the release of Bruce's latest album called Western Stars. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, maybe we had each heard a couple of songs, but the full album.
I forget if there's two or three, one or two. I forget at that point, but we've not heard it, the whole thing yet.
Right. The full album had not yet been released. So now we've had a chance to listen to that. And so we thought we'd come back to that and comment specifically on the new record, Western Stars.
I wake up in the morning, just glad my boots are on. Instead of emptying the whispering grasses down the favorite forest lawn, on the set the naked girl brings me 2 raw eggs and a shot of gin. Then I give it all up for that little blue pill that promises to bring it all back to you again. Write me down easy. got me down easy free. Tonight the western stars are shining bright again. Here in the canyons above sunset.
Who wants to start us off?
I mean, I can go ahead and start off. So I was just joking with you all because this will be, I think, the second time on a show where I've talked about Western Stars. So I think a lot of our listeners may know who Jesse Jackson is. If you've been a longtime listener of Rockin' the Suburbs, he has guest hosted on here before, and he has his own podcast called Set Listing Bruce, where he talks about everything Bruce Springsteen. He's a massive fan, loves him. So he brought me on the show because he wanted to know what I thought about Western Stars. He had heard all four of us talk about all those other classic Springsteen albums leading up to the release of his latest record, and he just wanted to hear what I thought of it. And after listening to it twice, I liked it, and I remember mentioning to him that I didn't think it was his best or his strongest, but I definitely do think that the added orchestra that's in Western Stars was incredible. And I remember you, Jim, I saw a tweet from you the other day that said, can Bruce Springsteen just travel with an orchestra everywhere he goes and the E Street Band? That would be exciting.
Yes, and the E Street Band. That's the key, because I would love to hear I would love to hear like a 20-piece orchestra or something like that also on some of the classic songs. That would really be something. Big wall of sound kind of thing. But anyway, go on.
We're getting off track. But there's one point. So I did mention that a lot of it is country. A lot of the record is country. And then right up until we get to the song Stones, we're sort of brought back to that classic Springsteen sound. That's what I remember mentioning to Jesse on that episode. But one thing that I didn't mention was that Sleepy Joe's Cafe. This was a track that I remember when it dropped, people were like, what the hell? Like, they didn't really know. They didn't know what this was about. A lot of people didn't think it was his strongest track, but I like it. It's a catchy jingle, and it plays in my head almost all the time everywhere I go. So clearly Bruce did something right. I enjoy the song. I'm going to be the outlier here and say that I do like Sleepy Joe's Cafe. And then one of the other popular songs that I do like, I do like The Wayfarer. I think that one's good too.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. We're jumping into the middle of the album, or the second, third, or whatever.
Another beer, Mike. Yeah,
the cafe song. I mean, it reminds me of a song like Mary's Place. I mean, he has these songs in his repertoire that evoke a place where people gather, and he sets the atmosphere and all that stuff. So that fit right in, and that was one way I connected his past work to this album, and that it fit in right with some of the things he does. You talk about the orchestration. It reminds me, it evokes some of these classic Western movies, you know, that John Ford did and others tried to do almost as well as him. And I'm not sure how that's going to rest with me in the years to come. Initially, when I heard the songs that were coming out, the first three singles came out individually, I was thinking, well, this is interesting. And as I'd listen to each song, I'd like it a little bit more. And I'm not sure where I'm going to be, you know, 5 years from now, where this is going to fit. But right now, I enjoy listening to it. But I think we're going to go, as we go talking about this, we may go deeper into where it's going to fit in the legacy.
Well, so let me set that up a little bit here and give this some context. But before I do that, I want to mention on the Sleepy Joe's Cafe, I have actually seen reaction from a lot of our listeners and friends, stuff like that a lot of people really like that song. So, you know, I don't know how I feel about it exactly, but it also has a little bit of a Tejano kind of like sound to it too, which I find kind of interesting. But anyway, let me just to give this record some context. So this is considered a Springsteen solo album. I mean, all of the albums, I believe, in his discography are always just credited to Bruce Springsteen, not Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Mm-hmm. But fans know that most of them are E Street Band albums, and the members of the E Street Band play on those albums. And then there's a few from time to time that are just Bruce Springsteen like solo albums, right? That's what this is considered. And it has a lot of string arrangements. It obviously has a country feel to it. Almost like a Countrypolitan sort of sound, right? Right. It's highly produced. It's very deliberate, I think, in its sound and its approach, right? Mm-hmm. And he's coming off at this point, he's coming off of the Springsteen on Broadway run that he had for a long time that, you know, Mike was fortunate enough to go see.
Yep.
And this is his next project. And again, it doesn't really involve the band. It's Springsteen wanting to put out something on his own. There's word that he said this in an interview that he has a bunch of other songs already written, that the next album that he is planning to record this fall is going to be an E Street Band album, and then he's going to go on tour next year. So
that'll be awesome.
He's going to get back, but I think he wanted to get this out of his system. He had this in him and he wanted to do it.
Yep.
My initial impressions, I have very mixed feelings on this, and I still haven't really settled where I am on this record. Mm-hmm. I think I really admire it more than I like it. Ah. You know, I think a couple things I really like about it are this. His last three albums, I would say, going back, reverse chronologically, High Hopes, Wrecking Ball, and Working on a Dream, if I have that right. Mm-hmm. All were good and had good songs on them, but none of them felt like a real album. They felt like just whatever random songs that he had and he wanted to get out there. And so I appreciate that this sounds like an album. This sounds like front to back, it's a piece of work. Mm-hmm. It's standalone, you know, and it's and so I admire that. A guy who's pushing 70 now, that he's out there and he's like, I still want to really try to make a great album.
Yep.
You know, in many ways, I think he accomplishes that. Mm-hmm. I think if you're in a certain mood and you want to hear music like this, you know, kind of more contemplative and sort of, if quieter is the right word, you know, it's not a rock and roll album, really.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And you want to like sit and listen to something, I do think this requires a certain amount of attention mm-hmm. has to be paid to it. Then I think largely it works. I think maybe where it doesn't quite work for me as well is that even with all of that, I'm still not feeling the songs themselves that much. Like I don't feel like there weren't like songs that just reached out and grabbed me the mm-hmm. way that when we talked about those classic albums, and it's a little bit unfair to compare his work today to those records, you know, he's competing against himself, but at the same time, you know, was there any song that just like lyrically just like grabbed me the way the river does, for example, mm-hmm. and there's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. But again, is that fair? I don't know.
There's certainly some phrasing that catches my ear.
Yeah.
And makes me think about that. But you're right. There's no songs on here that are definitely going to move into the top 20, probably, right. I think, of his individual songs. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, you know, when this album came out, I happened to be driving around, and I'd never listened to this, the Springsteen station on XM. And they had a call-in going on. And people were talking about the album, and a couple women came on the show, and because the two guys that were hosting mentioned, you know, we would like to hear from women because we've heard that this album might, you know, women might like it more than men. Hmm. And a couple women got on. I don't know if they had been, you know, brainwashed by the topic of discussion, but they did say they liked that, and they liked his voice on this album. Mm. It's almost like he learned to sing a different way than he did for rock and roll.
Yeah.
And because you have to hold these notes, he's not quite a crooner,
right?
But he's moving towards that in a way, and to be able to do that at 70 is quite an accomplishment, I think.
I don't have anything to say about this. I'll let you guys. No, I'm just kidding. I really respond to what you said, Mike. As usual, Mike's analysis is incisive, and I love the way you're thinking about this in context of his entire career. I think, to me, when I don't know if you guys remember when Bob Dylan came out with Lay Lady Lay, and suddenly he decided, I'm going to sing in a different way, and he did sort of this mellow kind of, you know, what many would consider, I don't know, superfluous, or, you know, maybe like kind of a throwaway track, you know, Lay on My Big Brass Bed, and, you know, just kind of a kind of Nashville song. But to me, a lot of Western Stars kind of evokes that part of Dylan, where he was able to change kind of his signature thing, and yet
I'm not saying this is what Bruce did, but it reminds me of, like, I think Dylan did it. I mean, Dylan, like, I'm going to see if I can do this. And, like, you know, a Nashville kind of crooning song. I don't know if Bruce did that, but at times I kind of get that feeling from it, because he is that good and he can do that. Also, I'll say, I don't know if any of you guys, do you ever go, Sam, and just lay down in your backyard sometimes in the grass? Do you ever do that?
Well, my backyard is in a septic field, but if I could, I would.
Only if he's a masochist.
I wouldn't suggest that, then. But sometimes I do, you know, just to do something different and take a break. Sometimes I'll go and just lay in the backyard and look at the sky for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes just to relax and try to get away from the screens and just try to chill. But this... You know, it almost reminds me of when you do something like that, you know, kind of weird, where you're looking at the sky and you're caught kind of between a daydream and, like, dozing off maybe for a minute or two. These songs seem to come from a place almost between consciousness and unconsciousness, like sleep and awake. Like, there are these weird kind of dream fables, you know, that you don't know where the pieces all come from and they kind of get put together. I mean... I'll say it's enormously pleasant. You know, I think what Jim said it rings true for me. I admire the fact that he's able to do this at this point in his career. Yeah. And first of all, in tremendous credit for the fact that it's stirred up so much conversation. I mean, to dedicate a whole episode of an extremely important podcast like this one to an album like Western Stars shows he's really accomplished something. But in all seriousness, I do think there's been, like Mike said, a lot of conversation around it. You know, there's been a buzz that probably hasn't been there for a long time. I mean, I'm 60-some years old. I don't even know how old I am, like 60 or 80. I don't even know, but I'll go into rooms a lot and not know why I walked into a room. But for him, at his age, to achieve this, you know, to get that, to be able to put this, you know, strangely evocative horse, you know, shiny muscled horse on the cover and not put his name there and just put Western Stars. And, you know, it's a great achievement in many ways, and I do tremendously admire what he's done. And I'll just make a quick note: this record debuted in, if this page I'm looking at is accurate, like 15 countries at number one, and that Manx Madonna kept him off the U.S. charts with Madame X at number one, and he was number two. So you know, to be able to shift in 2019, Springsteen, you know, 70,000 album equivalent units, whatever that means these days, is pretty impressive. So there's a tremendous amount to admire about it. But yeah, overall, I find it to be this pleasant kind of dream state. And like you said, Mike, it's an open question how it'll fare, you know, when 5 years down the road, we're, you know, maybe sitting back and looking at where it all fits in his career.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to crack the top five. I think we can probably get you guys to agree with that.
Yeah.
The question is, you know, do you play Magic? Do you? I mean, I think you'd probably play The Rising before this. This is putting my 60-year-old me, you know, at the...
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'll have a CD player then, but, you know, look, you know, hitting the button on Spotify, what do I want to listen to? It's, you know, is it going to be better than Lucky Town and those albums?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Well, okay. So let me build on that for a second here, because if you were to separate his albums between, like I said before, the band albums and the solo albums, right? So, I'm just going to give you a collection of ones that are just, I think, considered the Bruce Springsteen solo albums, right? Nebraska, Lucky Town, Ghost of Tom Joad, Devils and Dust, and now Western Stars. If you took those five records and you only had those, let's say, right, you'd be like, this guy's a really interesting artist. Yeah, like, true. You know, he's writing some really interesting songs. He's doing some different textures, some different approaches. You wouldn't be like, oh, I got to run out and go see him in like some stadium show, because he wouldn't be that kind of an artist, right?
Right.
And this is, so to me, it's like, this is an exercise for him to get something else out, you know, to express some other, you know, work some other muscles, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And, to still be doing that now and wanting to try something like totally different for him. Again, I think it's something really to be admired in an artist.
Sure.
Most artists, at this point in their career, let's take the Rolling Stones, for example, are kind of recycling their sound over and over and over
yeah, they
again,
are.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't want to do that. And so that's pretty great. And this album might really, in some ways, it might actually have legs because
yeah,
of that. You know,
I would say so.
Mm-hmm. It could be.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great is this could actually appeal to a wider audience than many of his other albums. I mean, you could take this and play it for your grandparents. If you wanted to.
You could.
And you could play it for your 5-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
Because they're probably more used to hearing orchestration than someone my yeah, age
good
is.
Point. Mm-hmm.
You know, and what's
point.
Interesting is we call this a solo album. There's probably more musicians credited on this album than any album he's ever yeah. made. I didn't
right.
add them up.
Yeah. Right.
But I did yeah. look. There's a lot of people
that's
on
impressive.
Here.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So I wonder how much the Broadway aspect appealed to mm-hmm. him and being able to expand mm-hmm. his horizon to create this. Yeah. I haven't read any interviews. I apologize, but I'm just wondering about that.
I would imagine it does. And, you know, to me, there's one song on this record that's kind of an outlier, number one, because it's the shortest song in the record, but number two, because it has kind of a weirder, sort of shorter, more brief feeling to it, almost like more instrumentally, but kind of neat, and it's called Somewhere North of Nashville. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear him do something like that, where all the songs were a minute or a minute and 50, and, you know, try to edit himself really severely and see what that comes up with, because that's cool. I love that he put it on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there's, what, 14, 13 songs on it. He didn't need another track, but I love that it's there, and it really serves as kind of a transitional thing, but to me, I really gravitate toward that song. I think it's just very evocative.
Yeah, it was so abrupt when I first heard it too, because I was listening to this on the train.
Yeah,
and like you said, you know, you lay out back and you listen to it, and it's a good album to you can sort of get in a different state of mind and listen to it, and you have a chance to collect your thoughts. But you know, I'm sitting on the train listening to this, then it's these 3-minute songs, then we get to Somewhere North of Nashville, then I'm like, oh, and then we get into Stones, and I'm like, yeah. What was that?
Yeah, yeah, what just happened
yeah.
there?
Yeah,
yeah, what was that?
I like that song a lot, too.
Yeah, it's
that was
very
a standout
cool.
to me when I first heard it, yep. because it just, yeah, like I said, it just kind of came out of nowhere and it just hit me. I want to talk about the singing style here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a variety of singing styles on this record, and some of them have that kind of gruff Springsteen, a little bit of the growl to it, right? And then mm-hmm. some of them are, like you said, the more mannered, almost kind of operatic sort of style that he gets into, and I'm not sure how I feel about that exactly. I'm willing to go on that ride, but to me, when you combine that singing style with the orchestration that's behind it, I immediately thought of Roy Orbison.
Yeah,
I thought,
yeah,
you know, I know that's a big influence on him, and I'm like, he's this is his Roy Orbison moment,
right? Roy Orbison singing for the lonely, absolutely
works for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll just say this, you know, if you really want to do something after this E Street Band album, Bruce, and I know Bruce listens to our show, so he's going to hear this, but
I hope so.
Do an instrumental album. How about that? That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be nuts. I would listen to it. I would.
Yeah.
It'd be tough to compare it to a lot of other things because it'd be the first. Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if he would ever does he have any instrumentals in his catalog? I don't
Nothing
even
I can think of.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean,
he could do a Dick Dale type thing.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I was
going to
say surf guitar.
Yeah, that'd be wild.
I'm sure Little Steven would get into that.
Yeah, man. Get Nils in there too. Have a triumvirate type thing.
Oh, that would be awesome. Guitar orchestra.
Okay, so I remember when we talked about the earlier Springsteen albums that we would always talk a little bit about the cover art. You mentioned it a little mm-hmm. bit earlier. What's your take on this one?
You know, it looks to me like an old Zane Grey, you know, dime store novel or something like that. You know, it's got that kind of feel, a tattered paperback that you'd see, you know, laying in a thrift shop or something like that. It comes from a weird time when you can't really place it. So
it's unusual for him not to have his photo on the cover.
Very.
Yes.
So there's something
very.
Here, again, to set this apart from the rest of his catalog.
Or name.
Yeah. Yeah.
We may be leading to a point you're going to edit, but I wonder why the horse's ass is to the front of the cover. Maybe he's making a joke about himself. Right. I don't know.
Some people have mentioned that too.
Oh,
like
that's
why
interesting.
That
backwards.
Perspective, right? Uh-huh. Is that trying to make a statement?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know what else to say about that.
But
yeah, me neither.
I'll just say this. I like what you said, Patrick, about it. I think there's, again, like the record itself, there's a lot of thought given to the packaging here, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's really trying to make this something more than just, you know, an average record, right?
Totally agree. Yeah. Did this come out on vinyl?
It did. It came out on a blue vinyl. I remember I was following the Bruce Springsteen account when it was on the heels of coming out. Mm-hmm. And I think the record's on a blue vinyl.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, it's very
interesting.
Pretty.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I'm just interested in where the break is for this record on vinyl, like what would start side two. I mean, I'm sure that's not something that was given consideration.
Now I see a clear vinyl with blue streaks.
Okay. That's the
European
one I saw.
That's a European import.
Oh, it's a double. So it on vinyl it ends up having to be a double.
It does?
Yeah.
For
two X album, yeah.
50 minutes. Oh.
So
okay.
Side one has three songs, side two has three songs. Side one has three songs, side two has three songs, side three has four songs, and side four has three songs.
Ah. Wow.
That's interesting.
Is it at 45 RPM?
Doesn't indicate that it is, but it'd be great if it was.
I have a feeling that's probably how they did
cool.
It.
That's cool, because it'll sound real good that way, yeah.
So yeah, I was thinking the break was probably at Chasing Wild Horses, and that is
kind of how
it worked out,
too,
right?
Yeah.
Favorite songs? Anyone? Any standouts on this record?
Well, I said The Wayfarer. I really like that one.
Sad story, love and glory going round and round. It's the same old cliche, a wanderer on his way slipping from town to town. Some find peace here on the sweet streets of home, where kindness falls and your heart calls for a permanent place of your. I'm a wayfarer, baby, I drift from town to town. When everyone's asleep and midnight bells sound, the wheels are sent up the highway spinning round and round.
And Sleepy Joe's Cafe is a special place in my heart.
That's cool.
Well, I like Drive Fast the Stuntman. I may be moving to Chasing Wild Horses as we listen to it more, but I like the story of this guy. I mean, I can imagine him, you know, thinking about somebody on a movie set and this guy's story, you know, how he would, instead of inhabiting like the bad guys of Nebraska or the street racers, you know, of darkness.
Yeah.
I got two pins in my ankle and a busted collarbone, steel rod in my leg, but it walks me home. At night I climbed high into the boughs of our neighborhood's tallest tree. I don't remember the fear, just the breeze. Drive fast, fall hard, I'll keep you in my heart. Don't worry about tomorrow, don't mind the scars. Just drive fast, fall hard. At 19, I was a king of the dirt down at the Remington Draw. I liked the peddling, I didn't mind the wall.
I think there's something interesting about that, too, that because at first listen, you know, Drive Fast the Stuntman, you think, like, this is kind of hokey. But I think what he's trying to say there, though, he's trying to highlight the people behind the scenes, the people who actually do the work, right? And have to, like, you know, have to sacrifice themselves in some way. Yeah.
They have wounds that have been fixed in various ways, you know, not always natural healing. And he's talking about how this peg in his leg and he can still walk home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we have some unfinished business on their relationship in there that makes you wonder what went on with this guy. You know, you don't really know the whole story.
Yeah. Patrick?
Well, certainly somewhere north of Nashville. And I love that little segue in, as Sam said, into Stones.
Yeah.
You know, those caught me right off the bat on the first listen and have kind of stuck with me.
We woke each morning with hearts filled, a bluebird of love on the windowsill. Now the heart's unsteady and the night is still. All I got's this melody and time to kill. Here somewhere north of Nashville. Here somewhere north of Nashville. Here somewhere north of Nashville.
Said those were only the lies you've told me. Those are only the lies you've told me. I pulled my collar to the wind and spit them on the ground. You said those are only the lies you've told me. Those are only the lies you've told me. Sat on the edge of our bed in the sun. I felt them gather on my tongue. I woke up this morning with stones in my mouth. You said those are only the told me. Those are only the lies you've told me.
I'll also throw a shout in there for Hello Sunshine. I know it was the lead single, but I think it's a pretty strong tune, and the orchestration and the strings really work well on that song.
So funny you should say that, because that's my favorite song on this record. It sounds to me like a song that has always existed, even though it's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Just this classic, not only sound to it, but just like song structure and everything. You're just like, how is this not a song that's like 50 years old?
Yep,
right?
Exactly. Well said.
Had enough of heartbreaking pain. Had a little sweet spot for the rain. For the rain in skies of gray. Hello sunshine, won't you stay? You know I always liked my walking shoes. You can get a little too fond of the blues. You walk too far, you walk away. Hello sunshine, won't you stay? You know I always loved a lonely. Those empty streets, no one around. Fall in love with lonely, you end up that way. Hello sunshine, won't you stay?
Another one that I think was released a single that I just like it because it just is a song that has a nice little hook to it and you remember it a lot is Tucson Train.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's I like cool that one. Song too. And what's interesting is you don't know what's. Is this woman coming and she knows he's going to be there, or is he just going to show up and try to, you know, fix things? I mean, there's a lot of interesting drama in that song.
Good point.
Yeah, that is. And you know, obviously a classic, you know, theme of, American post-World War II music is waiting for a lady on a train. Right. So.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. So there you go. Western Stars.
Mm-hmm. The Springsteen panel is now adjourned.
For now.
We are the official Springsteen panel.
I think we've all decided the next time we listen to this record, we all have to be lying on Patrick's backyard, right?
Yes. Patrick's backyard.
Yep.
And then maybe we'll have a whole different view.
Well, and I tell you, if the sky could be like it is on the cover, that's another big bonus with the, you know, sort of the clouds and some blue sky behind it, the big fluffy cumulus clouds. That'd be great.
But certainly hyper real. I mean, so we might have to have something to make it hyper real.
I'll see what I can do.
Might it be stronger than rice ale?
Yeah, I think this is only like 4% alcohol, and we're not going to hurt anybody with this.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. All right. This was fun.
Yeah, it was great. Good really, times. Really good. Well, I think this is an excellent panel.
Sorry, it's always good to talk about Bruce and where he's at in his career.
So at some point, we have to get to the other, 20 albums or something like that.
Yeah, really. I know.
Do that. Go in 15 depth. Maybe.
Yeah.
Something. All right. Very good. If anyone has any thoughts on Western Stars or Springsteen in general, you can call, leave a message, 612-440-1984. Or email rock@suburbspod.com. Or what do you think? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, all those places.
All those places.
Mm-hmm. And please send us direct messages on Instagram. Those our DMs are getting a little lonely on there. We would love some correspondence.
All right,
great to know.
They could put a package on the train, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The train runs across the country.
That's right. The mail train. Mm-hmm.
Or on a horse. Right?
Yes. Yeah. That would be fantastic. That's Pony Express.
That's right. There you go.
Stagecoach.
Anyway, all those social medias are at Suburbs Pod. All right. Let's get out of here.
Cool.
I'm going to enjoy some more rice ale. So it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm intern Sam.
I'm Mike Snyder.
Thanks,
talk
guys.
To you. Yes, thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Here's to the cowboys, riders in the whirlwind. Tonight the western stars are shining bright again. And the western stars are shining bright again. Tonight the riders on sunset are smothered in the Santa wind. And the western stars are shining bright again. Come on. This morning, just glad my boots were on.
Well, and the good thing is, I mean, I don't think he cares what we think, where we rank it in our record collection or whatever, you know.